Welcome back. This is the fourth audio file in which we discuss our analysis of the National Historic Preservation Act and specifically Section 106. Now, we've just discussed and explained how the National Register of Historic Places works. And we're going to continue now to discussing what an undertaking is, what the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation is, and what state and tribal historic preservation officers are. Okay? So first, undertaking. Remember that in Section 106, it says, the head of any federal agency, having jurisdiction over a proposed federal or federally assisted undertaking in any state, and the head of any federal department or independent agency having authority to license any undertaking, shall, prior to the approval of the expenditure of any federal funds on the undertaking, or prior to the issuance of any license, as the case may be, take into account the effect of the undertaking on any historic properties, right? So, in order to understand what the heck that means, we have to know what the definition of an undertaking is. And fortunately, the law and the regulations provide a specific definition of undertaking. And so undertaking means a project, activity, or program funded in whole or in part under the direct or indirect jurisdiction of a federal agency, including those carried out by or on behalf of the agency, those carried out with federal financial assistance, those requiring a federal permit, license, or approval, and those subject to state or local regulation administered pursuant to a delegation or approval by a federal authority. So I think what's important to understand about this is that it includes anything that's federally funded, anything that's actually carried out by a federal agency, anything that's carried out on federal land, anything that requires a federal permit, a federal license, or any kind of federal approval, and anything that's subject to state and local regulation if the state or local government is has been delegated the authority by the federal government, which sometimes happens, right? The point is that this is a fairly broad definition. This is a broad definition, and that is intended to encompass as much federal action as possible. Now, just so you know, there are other federal laws that are structured very much like the National Historic Preservation Act. One of them, for example, is the National Environmental Policy Act, which is sort of the umbrella environmental law in the United States, much like this is the federal umbrella law for historic preservation. And in the National Environmental Policy Act, they don't use the word undertaking; they use action. They define federal actions. Well, in the National Historic Preservation Act, they define federal undertakings, and they define them broadly so that the federal government, and remember, this law only applies, or Section 106 only applies to federal agencies. They want federal agencies to do this, to go through this procedure in most cases with only certain very, very limited exceptions, right? So an undertaking is almost any kind of federal action, whether it involves federal funds or any kind of direct or indirect federal supervision, and that includes federal lands, because doing anything on a federal land requires some kind of permit or license, and so on and so forth. So it's a broad definition. So almost anything that a federal agency does has to go through the Section 106 consultation process as described by the federal regulations at 36 CFR Part 800, right? Okay, moving along, what is the Advisory Council? Because you'll remember that in Section 106, it says that The head of any such federal agency shall afford the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation, established under Title II of this Act, a reasonable opportunity to comment with regard to such undertaking. So, the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation is created in Title II of the National Historic Preservation Act. It is an independent agency that exists to regulate Section 106, or compliance with Section 106 of the National Historic Preservation Act. They issue and enforce the Section 106 regulations, which, as I've said, are at 36 CFR Part 800. They also have responsibility for advising the President on historic preservation. They must be given, under the terms of Section 106, they must be given the opportunity to comment on undertakings or compliance with undertakings that fall under Section 106. They determine, the Advisory Council determines, whether or not federal agencies have complied with Section 106, right? So the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation is composed of a chairman who is appointed by the president from the public, a representative, the Secretary of the Interior or their representative, the architect of the Capitol. The architect of the Capitol is not exactly what he sounds like. He's actually sort of the historic preservation official for the District of Columbia. So his responsibilities are broader than just worrying about the Capitol building, right? The Secretary of Agriculture and the heads of four other federal agencies, which are not specified in the law and therefore are chosen by the president, I believe, by the president, or by the president in consultation with the Advisory Council itself. So there's the Secretary of the Interior and the Secretary of Agriculture and four other federal agency heads. So there are six federal agency heads. Or, you know, they don't usually show up, actually. They send people. You know, they send high officials, supposedly. A governor appointed by the president, a mayor appointed by the president, the president of what's called NICSHPO, which is the National Council of State Historic Preservation Officers. So the 53 State Historic Preservation Officers, because there are some for territories, have an association, and the president of that association is a member ex officio of the Advisory Council. Also, the chairman of the National Trust for Historic Preservation is a member. And then also four experts appointed by the president in the fields of architecture, history, archaeology, and other appropriate disciplines. So that, and occasionally there's been an archaeologist, right? So, and then three members of the general public also appointed by the president, and one member of an American Indian tribe or Native Hawaiian organization. So if you count them all up, there are 20 members. In some cases, those members represented by delegates. So as I say, the cabinet members who are actually the heads of federal agencies, they rarely come. But they are supposed to send a high-level official. At one time, they sent secretaries. I don't mean secretaries. I mean like clerical staff. And at some point, the president and the Advisory Council said, no, you have to send somebody who's at least like a deputy assistant secretary, which is to say a political appointee who has some real power. And so there's a member of there's an American Indian. There are several members of the general public. There are a bunch of government officials. And there are some experts. And these are the people who actually make the real decisions. And they meet several times a year, usually. In practice, most of the work is done by their staff. They have a staff. It's mostly lawyers who have some kind of background in historic preservation law. If you have a problem with some federal agency in the way in which they're carrying out their historic preservation responsibilities, you can call up the Advisory Council or write to them, and you'll get a response. I've done that. I've worked with these people. I've gone to meetings with them. I've given them rides. I mean, you know, they're the staff, not the not the cabinet members. And, you know, they're knowledgeable and they have a lot of conflict resolution skills and practice. And their job is to deal with individual Section 106 cases, as well as to write the regulations and interpret the regulations for Section 106, which are, as I say, 36 CFR Part 800, which you should have looked at already. Now, the next thing that we have to understand is what a state historic preservation officer is. Each state and territory has a state historic preservation office and officer, and they're usually called the SHPO. And basically, the National Historic Preservation Act required the states and territories to set these up. And in some cases, they already existed. In some cases, they didn't. The governor of each state decides who is the state historic preservation officer. Now, many states, I think most states, don't actually have a state title that is state historic preservation officer. The state historic preservation officer is a federal title that is given to somebody in the state who is then required to play the role of the state historic preservation officer for the purposes of Section 106. So, in some states, it's the head of the Department of Culture or Culture and Tourism or Culture, Sports, and Tourism, or some official in the Department of State or something like that. And they get designated by the governor as the state historic preservation officer for the purposes of the National Historic Preservation Act. And they usually have some employees who do things like maintain records and represent the state in their consultations with federal agencies under the terms of Section 106. Because remember, Section 106 requires consultation between federal agencies and state governments and tribal governments and other parties. The representative of the state in the consultation process is the state historic preservation officer. And so they run the state historic preservation office and they maintain records and they apply for federal funding. And they play a very important role in this process because under the regulations, the state historic preservation office or officer almost always has to be consulted by the federal agency whenever there's an undertaking that qualifies for as a Section 106 compliance problem or issue. And so they play a very important role in the process. Finally, we have tribal historic preservation officers. Tribal historic preservation offices were only developed in recent decades as part of, I believe, the 1992 amendments. And they play a role similar to the SHPO, but for federally recognized Indian tribes. And so what happens is if the undertaking is going to have an effect on Indian tribal lands or on archaeological sites or historic sites that are culturally affiliated with a tribe, then the tribe or the tribal historic preservation officer is eligible to participate in the consultation process. It's a little bit complicated because if the undertaking is on tribal land and there's an approved tribal historic preservation program, then the tribal historic preservation officer is consulted in lieu of, that is, instead of, the state historic preservation officer. If there is no approved tribal historic preservation program, then both the state and the tribal government get consulted. If it's not on tribal land, but it's something that the tribe is culturally affiliated with, then the state historic preservation officer, as well as the tribal historic preservation officer, if there is one, is consulted. If there isn't a tribal historic preservation officer, then the tribal government itself is the consulting party. They also, like the state, they play an important role in the process and are one of the statutory consulting parties. Now, let me just clarify a little bit more about how tribes and other indigenous peoples in the United States participate in this process. The National Historic Preservation Act requires consultation with federally recognized Indian tribes. And that definition includes Alaskan Native villages and corporations and Native Hawaiian organizations. These are specified individually because they exist under somewhat different legal authorities. There are lots of tribes. There are, I think, in excess of 700 tribes and Alaskan Native villages and corporations, not counting Native Hawaiian organizations, which are organized very differently. However, that's not an exhaustive... So these are federally recognized Indian tribes and Alaskan Native villages and corporations, which are kind of similar. There are also tribes that are either not federally there are tribes that are not federally recognized, but are there, that are state recognized, and there are tribes that are recognized by nobody but our tribes, and maybe have some kind of corporate existence. Federal recognition is not a good measure of whether a tribe is a real tribe or not. There are very, very real tribes that do not have federal recognition, and in some cases do have state recognition. And this is in part a consequence of the fact that the process of federal recognition, which is called the process of acknowledgement, has been broken for many, many years. It just doesn't function. And unfortunately, tribes that are not federally recognized have very limited rights in the National Historic Preservation Act and in the Section 106 consultation process. But sometimes states may ask federal agencies to consult with state-recognized tribes that are not federally recognized, or they may be consulted as applicants or members of the public. But normally, it's just federally recognized Indian tribes, Alaskan Native villages, and Native Hawaiian organizations. So now that I've explained what all these things are, you know, the National Register and an undertaking and the historic preservation officials and things like that, I'm going to talk in the next audio file, in the next part of the lecture, about how the procedure actually works.